time to check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. And the big story, of course, today, the meeting between President Biden and President Zelensky. And I guess it's kind of nerve-wracking to think about this for you, Joe, and the people there. The word is they may not be able to get funding before Congress goes home for the holidays. What are you hearing, and what's the talk there?
Well, Bob, good afternoon from Lviv. And, you know, there's obviously there is a lot of anxiety about this, but I think there's full confidence that President Zelensky, as we've seen, I mean, everywhere he goes, he's, you know, it's a pretty tireless task to keep making this argument, you know, almost 2 years into this, but that he will be an advocate for actual Ukrainian victory, which means not abandoning those Ukrainians who are currently in Russian-occupied parts of Ukraine. And that's one thing that I've seen him, especially in recent days, President Zelensky has emphasized. If you give up, it's not territory that would be given up, it's people, is the first thing to remember. People who live under this Russian tyranny, you know, already there's no freedom in Russia for Russians, sort of by their own design in some ways. But even worse, you know, the Russian animosity toward Ukrainians, toward people who speak Ukrainian, toward people who are not Russian Orthodox, is absolutely, you know, it is an oppression like what people experienced in the Soviet Union. You know, we always heard all those stories of what happened during the years of communism, and it's very similar to what happens when you're under the veil of Russia now. And in fact, there was a report from the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, which is Lviv here in the western part of Ukraine, is a majority Greek Catholic city, which means it's Eastern in style. But it's actually part of the Roman Catholic Church. It's a centuries-old history. And Russians in Russian-occupied parts of Ukraine, they have banned the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. They've also banned the Knights of Columbus. You know, so we hear all these, you know, some of these Americans who don't support Ukraine claiming that there's no freedom of religion in Ukraine. It's quite the contrary. I mean, even the Knights of Columbus, which I think we all know in America is a charitable organization of the Catholic Church, is banned in Russian-occupied places of Ukraine. So just a little glimpse of the type of tyranny that people face when Russia is in charge. And so I think that there is, you know, it's Zelensky has a tough task, you know, himself sort of alone there in Washington. And it's tricky because, you know, even if, you know, the White House has said, you know, for the past couple of weeks, the money is going to run out for Ukraine, but that, you know, they're not precise about these figures and what the money means. And as I mentioned before, you know, a huge portion of that money, $2.3 billion, is for refugees. It doesn't make any sense. You know, I mean, the Ukrainian refugees are pretty self-sufficient by now. They're earning money. They're sending money back home to Ukraine. So why does Washington need to spend $2.3 billion on refugees when really all that's needed is United States to agree to send mostly older weapons that we're not using anyway, and to give Ukraine permission to send long-range weapons into Russian bases in Russian territory and Russian-occupied parts of Ukraine. And so that's the question. I think, you know, there's two sort of existential questions that have to be asked in Washington for the Democrats. You know, how is it enough to simply wave the flag and spend money, to wave the Ukrainian flag and spend money to say you're doing enough to stop a genocide? Or do you actually need to find the courage to say, we have to win, we have to defeat the enemy? And then the question for Republicans is, you know, how, and I ask this as, you know, today, I think it will be today, Viktor Orban, the leader of Hungary, will be meeting, the prime minister of Hungary, will be meeting with the Conservative Heritage Foundation, which has built a legacy of talking about freedom. And the question for Republicans is, you know, can you ever talk about fighting tyranny if you do not stop what Russia is doing right now in Ukraine? And I think we see here the divide between the freedom talkers and the freedom fighters. So many Americans, you know, and Viktor Orban himself, the leader of Hungary, who's really become a darling of people like Tucker Carlson, he calls himself a freedom fighter. Literally, that's what he says when the country neighboring him is actually fighting for their life and for their culture and for their basic right to exist. And Bob, as we look at all this today here in Lviv, it's above freezing for the first time in weeks. So we've already had a good dose of winter. It was very cold, and there has not been a single major successful Russian infrastructure attack. there's power, heat, water, all these normal things. And I suspect that the Russians are waiting. They continue to fight, of course, at the front lines, and it's very intense battles in Donbass. There are missile strikes and drone strikes near the front lines. But I suspect the Russians are kind of hoping that the Washington will sort of cave and that they won't need to attack Ukraine the way they did a year ago.
The fact that Ukraine has been holding its own, as you say, there hasn't been a major attack from Russia in quite a while now, along with the distraction and, of course, it's important, of the war in Israel. Those things kind of are working against Ukraine at this point when the decision about more funding hangs in the balance, don't you think?
Yeah, I think part of it is sort of our fractured media. Certainly a huge part of the problem is the way we communicate with each other in America. It hurts our democracy. And, we almost have an inability to hold multiple ideas at the same time. For example, I read all the stories about, for example, Steven Spielberg, the director, said he's making a project about what Hamas did to Israel on October 7th, which is good that he's telling that story. It's important. But what Hamas did to Israel and then one horrible day is also very similar to the level, really to great level of detail as to what Russians did to Ukrainians, especially those first few months of the full-scale invasion. And on our website, ukrainianfreedomnews.com, I linked to a story from the Daily Mail about Ukrainian women who were raped in front of their families by the Russians. And so that's so similar to what Hamas was doing. So it's what we need to say is, wait, this is the same type of evil we're fighting. It's on different fronts, but in order to really defeat it, we have to have the sort of wisdom to step back and say, we need to realize that these are not separate, totally separate things. And I think we so often we just get distracted. And there's this, I see on Twitter their big controversy the past days. Where Elon Musk was tweeting about some American journalist. I think he's American Spanish who was in Ukraine. And he's pro-Russian, and he was living in Kharkiv. And for a year, he was in Ukraine tweeting against Ukraine, tweeting in favor of Putin, while Kharkiv was being bombed. And finally, the Ukrainian, he was free to do so. No one stopped him. No one liked him, but no one stopped him. And then Ukrainian authorities finally arrested him when they had evidence that he was revealing targets for the Russians to hit in Kharkiv City. And that's a very important detail. And this is just one sort of cog in the machine, and then but that's what everyone is talking about. And very powerful people like Elon Musk and Tucker Carlson. This is what they choose to talk about. When as long as we get focused on those little things, it's going to be very difficult to have a clear, plan to defeat the evil that clearly is allied with each other: Hamas, Tehran, Beijing, and Moscow. And as a sign of how easily the Russians know they can play the American, they can manipulate American discourse. Serhiy Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, was interviewed by Al Jazeera at a conference in Doha, the Doha Forum. And he was asked to justify why Russia invaded Ukraine. And he said, oh, we're fighting cancel culture. That's an absolutely absurdist idea. Well, we need missiles and rockets to fight cancel culture. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. There's really no cancel culture in Ukraine. It's a very free speech country. But he knows all he has to do is say those words, and he will ignite certain sectors of the American electorate, including people in Congress. He will get them to support him. So it doesn't matter how many people he kills, as long as he says the right words, he knows Americans will follow him. Mm-hmm. And somehow we have to get out of this in our American discourse.
Russia still doesn't even call it a war. It's a special military operation. I want to leave you with some good news, Joe. An email about an organization, Ukraine Trust Chain. I don't know if you heard of them, but it's a group with Chicago roots, and they are helping. They're organizing time and donations and volunteers. They have evacuated 14,000 people to safety. They're now raising money to buy more vehicles to save more people. It's headed up by a tech executive at Zillow in Chicago, and they send money directly where it's needed. And that is definitely good news, isn't it?
Yeah, this is how the war will be won. It is this people of their own volition and forming small groups, working for victory. And that's how Ukraine has been able to hold on for this long. But, you know, with those long range incredible weapons in the U.S., this could come to an end much more quickly.
Wouldn't that be nice? Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Thanks, as always, Joseph. Talk to you tomorrow.
Until tomorrow. Thank you, Bob.